ahead, Mr. Smith. You say this is a... Do you call this a writer's credo?
I think you could call it Mère de la Sœur's creed. It was published in Corn Village, a story she wrote in 1930, and it seems to me that since every writer belongs someplace and should belong someplace, have his roots someplace in order to be a universal kind of writer, that this offers a good creed.
Maybe that's a good hint right there. Let's write about our own roots, is that?
Yeah. She closes Corn Village in part by saying, "O Kansas, I know all your little trees. I have watched them thaw and bud, and the pools of winter frozen over, the silos and the corn blue sky, the wagon tracked road with a prints of hoofs going where, and the little cricks gullying with delicate grasses and animals, the prairie dog, the rabbit, and your country with its sense of ruin and desolation, and the mind scurrying like a rabbit, trying to get into your meaning, trying to get you alive with significance and myth. I have seen your beauty and your terror and your evil. Not going to Paris or Morocco or Venice, instead staying with you, trying to be in love with you, bent upon understanding you, bringing you to life. For your life is my life, and your death is mine also."
Isn't that a beautiful description? There's another question. Does word choice come by instinct or sweat of the brow or both or
I
neither?
Think it's both.
Both. Do you study the dictionary or not? Here comes Mr. Willen. I thought that would bring him.
If you read Theodore Dreiser, you wonder where words come from. But most writers think that they have to work over word choice. Of course, Dreiser didn't, and he's successful.
So it just depends upon each person is different, I suppose, of course.
You can get away with whatever's successful, it seems to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would like to join the course if we could have the time. Maybe we could really start. And how about it? Those of you who've been thinking about writing, does this give you some help today? I'm sure it has. And we've enjoyed very much our opportunity, and we thank you, Dr. Coleman, for telling us, giving us this opportunity, rather, to come out here and talk with you, Mr. Willen. And I'm sorry that we're going to lose you in Minnesota way. You're going clear out to New Jersey,
yes,
is that right?
Yes, and I'm sorry to leave Minnesota.
Mm-hmm. And our poet, Ray Smith, probably many of you know his poetry, and so that it's you feel as if you've met an old friend here today. And June, wish we could have some of your poetry with us, but I understand that she doesn't happen to have any with her right now. And thank you, Mr. Willis, publisher of Beacon House down there in Sioux City, Iowa. And so I guess we're going to have to say goodbye because these people have another discussion period coming along here. And so we're going to have to say goodbye for this morning. Goodbye.
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 Well, I came over in 1869 and my mother came over in 1871.
And she was from Sweden too, right?
No, she was from Sweden too. They met in Ishpeming, Michigan. Or not Ishpeming, a place 20 miles from called Michigamme.
Oh, yeah.
You know where it is?
Uh-huh. Ishpeming, I know where it is.
Yeah,
well,
Michigamme is about 20 miles from there.
Mm-hmm.
That's usually a mining town, but then you know, it's just about, I suppose, a ghost town now.
What did they do in Sweden?
We have a little farm there, you know, and mother left when she was younger and come over here.
She came with her family?
No, she came alone.
Oh, yeah.
She had eight. No, six.
Six.
Four boys and two girls. But her sister died when she was 17 years old. Had a measles.
Oh.
And then the pneumonia set in. That was 1900. And I had a measles too. I kept dying. My brother taught the same thing. And then I got a sister in California, she's in San Diego. And Mrs. McKay, she's a widow, her husband died about 16 or 18 years ago. And I got a brother in Bourbon, Illinois. He used to be a traveling superintendent for McDonald Engineering Company. He was in Russia 1 year.
Oh, he did?
Yeah. But he was a superintendent for a big job to put up there.
Oh.
We were there 1 year. Meet up with a fella up in the Rural Mountains. His name was Euler. He's in the state engineer for a state now. And he was there in the Rural Mountains there. So he happened to meet up with this American. So my brother Charlie says, "Where are you from there in Minnesota?" Well, he said, "I'm a place called Crosby," he says. He said, "I got a brother," he says, "a little close to Crosby there." He said, "What's his name?" He told me, "Oh goodness, I know him." He said, "We used to buy milk and cream from him. I used to deliver the milk and cream there and eggs neither." He said, "We used to buy milk and cream, so I know him pretty well." So they got to talking there, so he didn't let them for a long time. So they was in Moscow once, looking at a hotel or a room, you know, for some kind of apartment out. And so just for a come in there, he seen a little boy, that's my nephew there. He says, "Is there any Americans in here?" "Yeah," he said, "I'm American." He was a little bit of a shot in. He said, "Dad," he says, "there's an American out here," he says, "come on out." So my brother Charlie went out there, and there he lived him again, second time. Right Lake, just south of here. And Frank went out there and talked to him. And he says, "What are you doing here?" "Well, you know, taking lake levels." And they come and talk, and but then they found out what that they met up to. It was in a restaurant in Crosby. I didn't know what it was in town. Had a breakfast there, but well, they went to the cabin out by Bay Lake. In a restaurant had a breakfast there. Well, I come in and I seen him there, so after a while Euler came in there and he was talking, all kidding me all the time, but I was a good natured fella. So he says, I want to introduce you to a fella. "Did you know any fella over here?" Charlie looked at him and he looked at him and he didn't know each other. I said, you met up in two different times, I said, in Russia. Then they got looking at each other, you know, then they come and recognize each other. quite a bit had been cut, but you know, after I'd been cutting a lot of timber here. And poplar and oak and so on, and a lot of pine here. Still forest, heavy forest, you know. I'm going to show you a plank we got out here that is going to, my nephew, you want that thing up here, we're going to make a kind of a bench out of it. It's 22 inches wide. From a log. We had the logs here scaled 1,500 feet. Mm. And then we had Indians here. And blueberries. Mm. Indians by the road, there was a little about a half mile, no, about a mile down the lake there. They used to camp out there during blueberry season. About 1,000 Indians. Mm. Well, they sidetracked the baggage coach in Brainerd. And they loaded that up with blueberries. And sent to Montana every night. The bay show blueberry went to Montana during blueberry season, you know. And the Indians picked them for 35 cents a bushel.
Bushel?
Yeah. And now you pay 40 cents a pound, it's in a quart in a bushel, in a pound. So it was. The thing is just all through here. Now you can't find a blueberry bush.
Is that?
In Bay Lake. So you moved sawmill to Deerwood. A lot of lumber here. And then they had another sawmill come later on. And still they got saw. Now they had big mills. Now they got these portable mills. All sections, you know, mm-hmm. except 16 and 36 have school sections. On somebody else's property when they log.
Long accent. Yeah.
TV walkers log around here, warehouses and...
Uh-huh. And I never heard
that. Well, that means they go right on to another next 40, you see.
I know.
there was stealing timber before that, you know. Well, they didn't use a saw tree, just chop down the axe. And there was timber galore here then, of all kinds.
Yeah.
And then they would start to build up. There was only a little station there, and then they built up a little and started with some stores. The Indian Corporation built a town to keep mm-hmm. the boarding, the railroad crew, you know, working. Yeah. It wasn't men that boarded. And then afterward, they built another section out. And then part of Homestead, the land, so he moved out. And then they used to have, the, where I was born, they used to have a freight out.
There was six children.
Yeah, well, there were six children. There was only three there, you know. But my sister and my two sisters, my brother Charlie, they was born on the farm, except they got, you know.
$1.10 a day
for 10 hours. Work on the railroad. Well, then the homestead, of course, the land that we are not what we got now.
Mm-hmm.
First it squatted. And then the homestead law got in, and another father went and the homestead had a piece of law and the father squatted on.
Mm-hmm.
Then father went and the homestead the other quarter next to him, he got the best piece of land. 1877.
Hadn't been a state very long.
No.
And they came.
No.
58,
what?
68.
Next year will be the state. That's something. You ought to build up a monument in St. Paul for T.V. Walker. Oh my, says, you look up north in the part of the state, you see lots of monuments to T.V. Walker. Some stand here.
Sure.
Yeah. Now you said to me, you know, they all taught by Washington Avenue, Minneapolis.
Yeah. You just talked to those men, you know, they were the old lumberjacks and
sure.
The old railroad men. They built the state. And
sure.
There they are without a bed to sleep in.
Yeah. Now I'll tell you, there was one fella come up to our place some years ago and asked you to get something to eat, an Irishman, big fella. And he says he started work when he was a little boy in the lumber woods, in the wood, in the time, went into the camp, working in the camp. And then he says when the spring drive come up, you call it, then they loaded on the rivers, you know, mm-hmm. So on, then he had to drive, let it all float down the river, down to the Minneapolis, some little falls and so on. Well, then when the drive was through, then he went to Ohio Street in North Dakota.
Mm-hmm.
And he went far south as he could, you know, and then he kept moving north, and north, and it got cold. And he went back and to the lumber woods. And called after he came from the house field, he went there and spent all his money for drinks. Mm. Well, and then he went into the woods, earned the money. When he came back, drinking, he spent all his money for drinks, and he went on a drive, and year after year, hundreds and hundreds of them. Jackie came to Aiken and said, well, he said, now I won't tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to go and take a good bath. Then I'm going to say, I want to get some clean clothes and put on. He said, now I'm going to go home. And he said, my family is waiting for me. They're glad to see me come home. Boy, he thought he'd go and have a drink before he went. He didn't get any further. All his money went right there. He didn't get his bath and his clothes. And he stayed naked 3 days before he was home. Then he would come home. He was sick.
Mm-hmm.
See, and everything. And I said, I told one party here some years ago, you got kind of mad about it. You kind of knocking the IWW. Well, I said, I ain't never belonged to IWW, but I said, they've done one good thing. Yeah, what's that? What's the good thing they did? I said, you know, I said, all them lumber camps and all that stuff. Out west, I said, I won't say about Minnesota, but because they even had IWW. I says, they put a stop to it, they had their camps clean. There couldn't be any like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, that one thing, the IWW, I said, show me, I said, well, I said, you're overthrowing yourself. Well, they're digging a grave, falling in themselves, ain't they?
Sure. Timber and the berries, yeah. And the Indians. And
timber berries, we worked in the garden on the field, went to school 3 months of the year. And I'm 15 years old and I quit school and I haven't been to school since. We had to stay home and help on the farm.
Mm-hmm.
And our teachers were that way, you know, they were only great teachers and they wasn't, they only could teach you so far. Well, when next teacher come, you had to start you from the beginning, that's as far as you got. Frank is the only one who went to high school apart of town, the rest of us didn't. Next board, in Brainerd.
Mm-hmm.
He's a fellow, Erickson, he was the sheriff there, and yes, he could work for the board there, and he had to work too, I said, to get the horses and so on, and work around the place for his board when he went to high school.
Dancing?
Oh, yeah, we used to go out to other kind of dance in barns, and then we had the homes, place, and go to dance, and sometimes we had the picnics. Then all the old and the young ones went together, you know, and had a good time.
Mm-hmm.
When visits were right in the middle of the week. Visits. Now you don't do that anymore.
You did what in the middle of the week?
Go and visit with your neighbor.
Visit.
Sure.
Yeah.
Since we had a fellow by Harry Patterson, he was an old early settler. I come here, he was a druggist from Norway. He come over here and he's a pretty smart fellow, but he's a good fellow too. But he lost one eye and then he got hurt, and so he got one leg was stiff, he was, got knee hurt.
Mosquito.
Yeah.
Come here, you so-and-so.
Well, I'd be coughing, an old Yankee, you know, it was liar, and you could never trust him for anything. His name is Coffin,
mm-hmm.
And he's got a granddaughter, she's working at a sanatorium in Walker now. She used to teach school in Minneapolis. And he got a son in Detroit and one in New York.
Big stuff.
Yeah, but the TV Walker and anything cut in timber on our land. But that Coffin, I told you, he thought he had the line was in an hour, you know. He started cutting timber. But then his brother-in-law thought it wasn't right, so he went and got a surveyor.
Mm-hmm.
Better. Well, he got some dynamite and blasted him out. Of course, my brother Frank, he didn't like that blasting. You know, he's afraid of dynamite, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so he blasted. But now, here, on this place, where we come here, we had the... Well, with the bulldozer and push the stumps out and chug them out and...
Oh, well.
And
now these... But that must have... I have often thought how terrible it must have been to take those big stumps out.
Go in the stairs.
They must... Was the land any good after you got
about
for farming?
Yeah, sure. We got about 30 acres on the side of here because we moved that house too big to keep warm, and then we... Frank and I getting too old to... And they were too far from the road to get a road in there in winter time.
Mm-hmm.
So we... They had two dead ends of the road, one...
Right around here, no.
Oh, well, they was born in Michigan, you know.
Oh, I can't
remember. Except old Israel, he was from Italy, but he came here as a young man, you know. He's same age. I went out to work on railroad for a while.
Oh.
Then I went out to Dakotas in the summer.
Worked in the wheat?
Worked in the wheat, yes. And then I was in... I worked in Duluth on the ore docks while there was a carpenter putting in new timbers in there, you see. I worked on that for a while, and I went to Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and worked on an elevator there for a year. Built the elevator for the Quake Oats Company.
Mm-hmm.
And then afterward, I was home a year, and then I went to Chicago for a year. And then I've been home ever since.
You came back and farmed?
1907, I was in Chicago. I've been home ever since.
You came back and farmed then?
Yeah, on a farm.
Mm-hmm. You like farming?
Oh, no, I don't.
You don't?
No, I don't. Tell the truth. I am no farmer. You know, I try and convince, you know, the old people, you know, when they, whatever they was, the children supposed to be,
yeah.
when they, that's the old style, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if the old man was a shoemaker, all the boys had to be shoemakers.
Mm-hmm.
And if you happen to be a carpenter, they wanted to be a carpenter. Girls wasn't counted.
Mm-hmm.
No,
they got married.
They were supposed to get married, you know, and it wasn't counted. It was just like nothing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I've been telling a lot of women now since it wasn't being for us. I said, like socialist, and then I said, you wouldn't have to vote now. They wouldn't.
No, that's right.
We worked hard for it.
Mm-hmm. So did the women.
Yeah, sure it is. Well, say, a woman don't know how to vote. I said, do you know how to vote? No, I didn't. Mm-hmm. I know I was on the town board here for 5 years. Previous to that, I was every election we had, I was a assistant clerk, you know. Well, there's one fellow come in there and he wanted help to vote. He couldn't vote, he had to have help. So the chairman said, well, who do you want? And he said, can I have Ingman over there? Yeah. He said, Vic, he said, will you help that fellow vote? This Norwegian fellow, you know. And he said, can I borrow your glass? I can't see very good. I said, all right. I took my glass off. I said, can you see with these? Oh, yeah, I see better. Now he says, that's the time when Magnus Johnson was running for governor. You remember him?
I do.
Well, he was running for governor that time, so he says to me, he says, is Magnus Johnson Norwegian? I said, yes. I lied to him, you know, because he wasn't. He was Swede. But and wait till when they got his indelible pencils, you know, and a big... Mick Frost, I said, and then he took the glass and gave it to me. Why didn't you go to vote anymore? No, that's enough. He voted for Magnus Johnson because he was a Norwegian.
Uh-huh.
Well, a woman could have done the same thing. And before I was old enough to vote, my father was on town board one, as one of the judges, I reckon. And so, kind of a dark night, you know, so we stayed out late, so I took the lantern and went down to meet Dad, you know, we have lights going. Well, during the daytime, the two fellows went past our house and they said they're going to go in and vote a straight ticket. Well, come upon two tickets, they voted for every one on the ballot, every one. And they thought that funny. Well, I says, I was only 16 then. I wasn't quite old enough to vote anyway. Well, I said there was two fellows that went by. They told they were going to vote a straight ticket. Charlie Adams, his name was Charlie, he was the chairman of the town of the board. Well, sir, if you could find any more straight in this, he says, you've got to show me, he says. Everyone was voted. Oh, there, that they didn't like. The women in that community didn't like him at all. They thought they were going to get him out. So there's one brother had a heavy vote, you know. Well, so we're going to get that certain superintendent out. So they put a cross. They're going to cross him out, you see. And he went in the bigger majority than he ever did. The women were all going to cross him out. Everyone voted to put a cross opposite his name. Going to cross him out. Well,
and that elected him.
Elected him with a big majority ever did. They couldn't figure it out. Well, I voted against him. Sure they did, but they voted for him. Thank you. He was working on the war docks in Duluth. And he, of course, he was talking all that. So the one fellow says to him, he's a boss there on the job, you know. He said, fine, you ought to go down, he says, in Duluth. He said, you could hear some speakers. Speaking of something like you do. So Frank went down there, and there was a fellow by the Dvorak. He was a photographer there in Duluth. He spoke socialist on a one soapbox. And Frank says, I just took to that just like a duck to the water. And then he started. Well, I kind of reasoned things out myself, you know, before that. And well, he did too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says, the policeman come and took the fellow out of the soapbox. Another fellow stepped on. And Frank asked him, what reason was the policeman taking away? Well, he says, he's allowed to talk that kind of talk, socialism in the room. Frank, a moment, he held a speech to himself, he's talking. But he was stage fright one, you know. So he fell down on the way. But he, halfway, he got on pretty well. And from then on, he's been on. He always part. It's part of the, I don't care where it is, he gets in that.
Mm.
When he was out in Washington, then when he come in with the communists, and we got a few comments, but this one here, Johnson, he's a good fellow. He's the only one that he interfered at all. maybe like J.L. Johnson.
And Crosby.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's a pin. He comes up here quite often. And they're playing him, sit and talk here for 3-4 hours. And she comes along, she's just as wide awake sure as he is. But then they got another bunch of Finns here. They're scared. We had a big membership here. And we had such a crowd in the hall as if we could get in there. Once we had a fellow, he was from Massachusetts. His name was Ivan Anderson. He could talk Swedish or English, either one. And we had a Croatian hall, we rented that in Crosby. And it just overfilled. And then next day we had went down on Main Street in Crosby. And you see, when he started to talk, they opened the doors and the windows, and they stuck their heads out and listened, you know. And then some one fellow from Minneapolis,
Ole Steiner.
You know him?
I don't remember.
He had a beard. But he had such a voice in the building, you know. He was in the building. He had a voice putting in a bust of ears when he talked. And I told him, Steiner, I said, when you talk, I said, in the building, I said, please don't talk so loud. I said, they can't stand some of them. And they couldn't. There's one woman, she had to walk out, she says, and she held her hands like that for years, and still she heard every word. And she had to get out of that because she couldn't stand. She thought she was going to bust her eardrum. In Detroit. Once Bill Snyderman was there.
Yeah.
And Red Carson, you remember him?
Yeah.
He was there and spoke. And
I saw him in Los Angeles last year.
Oh, is he there now?
He's a plumber there.
Oh, yes, sir. And then, I had several other people. Then we had one for, he's a Finn, but he could talk. He's a, Alpha Tiala.
Oh, Tiala, yes. Yeah. He was a wonderful person.
Oh, he was wonderful.
He lives up in the North Woods.
Well, does he?
Uh-huh.
I just don't know where he lives.
He works on Tiamese.
Oh, yeah, there. I know it.
Uh-huh. I guess he has a little resort or something up there in the North.
You don't know what part of the North? He didn't he?
He died in Spain.
He died in Spain, yeah.
Did he come here?
He come up here and won. He won, you know, they had a kind of a league, you know, they wanted to have those good. Have it over our place. And I was there for 2 days. Something was there. And there was a woman that was with the Tansy was up here. And she called her Lou Scott. And we had a kind of a school for the comedy up in the Palisade. She's a tall, slim woman. She was with Tansy. I like that Tansy. He was nice for her.
Yeah, he was
nice. Anyway, they were there. For 2 days, well, they had meetings in the Croatian Hall in Ireland, but they took their meals over to the farm at home. And then some of them slept in the neighbor's barns, and I had three or seven in my barns, and I had some that slept in the house. Well, I expected they were going to come one night. They came, it was raining, just pitchforks, as I'll say. And I thought, well, nobody's going to come tonight, a night like this. So I went to bed, you know, and it just pouring down rain. All at once, heard someone rap at the door. Then Emil and I got come and show them where I lived, you know, where the place was supposed to be. Then a three follower, he went for a Peterson from Bemidji, and one of Bowman from Bagley. And there was a preacher, I can't think of his name, but it was. Well, there was eight of them come. And in the middle of the night, and the raining, and I didn't have a bed for all of them. I was bashing there myself, living all alone there, Frank was out west. And so they slept on the floor somewhere, and made big marks, it wasn't being much. And I gave up my bed, you know, and sat down and talked to two fellows we doctor and more sit there mornings in the kitchen talking, cooks and coffee, drink coffee and talk. And that's me. And then next day they had the, well, that's just in the morning. I said, I'm going to go out and milk the cows. I said, there's whoever's the best cook of you, I said, can cook the breakfast at this. And I had bought stuff home, so I had plenty of it. I said, you can cook the breakfast, I got to do the milking. Oh, it's all right. In the meantime, there's a woman, she's going to do the cooking during these 2 days, you know. She came early enough, so she helped the fellows to make breakfast. And we had an awful crowd, holy goodness. Yes, I remember he was here, and Red Carson was here at that time, but it was then Teola. And then there was, I can't think of the other part of Minneapolis was up here. And then another time I had a brother to Red Carson, he was up to our place once too.
Oh yes.
Saltis over here many times, after quite a few times.
Who's that?
Saltis.
Saltis, oh yeah. Yes, Saltis. He was a good talker.
Yeah, he was a good talker.
Yeah, he was
I worked on farm. Then father, mother died, and father, he didn't want to stay with any of us, you know. He went to old people's home at Sauga City. Then Frankie was out, then they left, and I was alone on the farm there for 10 years.
10 years?
Yeah. We were trying to sell it, but it was hard to sell it. Anything. Oh, we could sell it, but they wanted to give it away, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But now we get a chance to sell, I don't know what's the matter with Frank. Now he's 83, he's going on 84, you know, he'll be 84 next spring.
And he's still waiting.
He's still waiting. And I'm 80. So Grace got the... And I said, we don't know. I got a good heart.
Mm-hmm. Well, you don't look 80.
Yeah.
About 60.
Yeah. I got a good heart, I can walk and keep up with anybody. A couple of years ago, I helped them fill a silo. Richard said, you know, you remind me of whiskey. So why? Improving by age.
The older the better.
The older the better. It's good for you. We like
it. I'd love to see it.
Yeah.
It must be
a shop out here.
Mm-hmm.
It might be out there someplace. I don't know what to do. I'll try and look
for
it. But you write down, you write the pages of us, and you have it indexed. I said, then you could find it.
Yeah.
But here, pile at the Oldman Farm, that high, and across a 16-foot room. And then he got some downstairs there, and then he got a whole lot of them over here. He got some in the shop there. You know what they are, don't you?
Yeah, but
you pick out all some of them best books and turn them over to the library. But then I thought maybe you destroy them.
Well, did you?
Yeah.
When was that?
She was at Lum Park. Floyd Olson was supposed to be there that day, but he wasn't there that day.
Oh. That was in the 30s, huh?
In the 30s, yeah.
Were they up here when they went?
Park there in Lum Park.
Oh, she's a wonderful speaker.
Yeah. And then we had a girl speaker here once. I can't think of her name. Oh, yeah, Mattisau.
Mattson?
Mattisau. And I just wonder if she could be to that and sister or relation that Mattisau that's done that lying, you know.
Oh, Mattisau. Where did she come from?
And she was talking and she heard some three or four girls back there just snickering, laughing and laughing and talking on. You know? She's just a minute. She says, the winter's going to come on, she says, and we might have a cold winter, she says, and we've got depression, she says, and your dad, she says, you might need a new coat, she says, and your dad ain't got a job, she says, and thank you, she says, and the girl shot up never said another word. They took the hint.
Oh, that's good.
I should have good. Now, They stayed at our place for a week, them two girls. When Frank and I was living there, they stayed for a whole week. Spiegel, or something like Rose Spiegel.
Spiegel?
Yeah.
Oh,
you know her?
Little girl.
Yeah, little girl.
Uh-huh.
She was with her.
Oh, she was?
Yeah. And I think she worked for some, what the heck was she told me she worked? Rick, I used to go on and some trouble.
In the mines?
Yeah, in the mines. Emil was a good talker too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So he got elected, all right. But you know, then the trouble was he didn't get elected. There was a lot of them, you know, that voted for him, thought they were going to get an easy job, you know. Well, I told one fellow, I said, you know, I voted for him, he says. And he says, you know who he put off for that job and for this job? I said, that's the reason you voted for him, you wanted to get a job on the city? I didn't vote for him myself, I said, because I was out of the jurisdiction, I said. I lived in Jaywood. But I said, I wouldn't vote for men just to get a job. One party, he wanted to be an inspector for something. Well, another party got it, you know, a Finn.
Mm-hmm.
And he was good too, I tell you, he was attending to business. But this fellow, he wanted it, and what did he do? He would spend the liquor store most of the time, spend a big part of the time in there.
Mm-hmm.
But he thought he was going to have that job, get that job, that's the reason he voted for him. But to hold that job, I tell you, couldn't do it. I've been here several times.
He was a good fellow.
Yeah, he was a good fellow. I wonder what he is. He was right in the farmer's part there in the worker. Because he was several times. He'd be up to our place on the farm many times.
Mm-hmm. His daughter comes around. Yep, they're still there.
Yeah, you know, we was here from the one. We ain't heard from them for a long, long time.
I just came from there.
Well, that's all?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I know Youngerson too,
Little
yeah.
Clara and,
yeah?
Yeah, she's in the same place.
There's another father from there, but he went out west. What's his name? Gust. I think his first name was Gust.
Yeah, Gust. His daughter.
Clot.
I just met.
Clot?
His daughter lives in the old farm.
Well, so you ever come over to our place? She said, the coffee pot is on the stove all the time.
The what?
The coffee pot, she says, on the stove all the time. So anytime you want a cup of coffee, just go and help yourself.
Uh-huh.
Well, I was going to go down there, not for the coffee, but...
Yeah. Haven't you ever been in Pine County?
I've been in Pine County, I've been in Montreville River.
You should take a trip down there with them sometime.
I got a party, I live right over here by the glass and the pail. And they live close by, but you're there. You're Miss Palin at that time. There's a bought from this, what's his name, E.C. Mark. He was kind of a horse trader, and he died some years ago, so she married another fellow. She said, he got a cabin, a house out of him. She said, now we had a neighbor, she says, up there in Willow River, she says, and they are. He got several of them there. And she said, you can't meet any nice one. I said, who are they? And she told me. Well, I said, I know him. I know them pretty well. I said, we have been many times. Oh, you know? I said, sure. No, I said, they ain't bad. And I told her another about this clot. Well, she couldn't place him. But she's Jurgensen, and then she mentioned another one there. But I said, she says, well, Frank says, now he says, you're having these tests about this big hydrogen bombs and A bombs and so on. He said, you were a church people, said, do you do anything to stop it? Well, nothing, but you want to be ready, she says, to when you leave. She says, well, great Scott, you don't do a darn thing. I got a sister, she's a Baptist, she's in San Diego, California. She sent me a letter, she's going to come in like Dickens, so. Stand again and says, don't try to investigate, he said, the one party Prince of the Leaflet sent out. He said, believe, have faith in it, and it's going to save you.
Yeah.
You just have faith. Your good deeds ain't going to save you, you've got to have believe. You don't need it, because if I ain't got good deeds and just have faith, what do you want? Well, the Bible says, patriot this is dead by the mortality. I feel like this. One generation after, I believe you're here now, after, you know, it continues forever. I don't believe that when you die that you're going to go up to heaven and so on. I believe you, when you die, you're dead.
Oh, hello.
How are you, Miss?
Thought I'd never get here, huh?
Yeah.
I did too.
This is my son, Mrs.
How do you do?
What did you do? Walk down here?
Oh, well, I had a friend that brought me, and she got interested in the circus last night. She's a photographer. So she followed the circus to Ashland, so I'm going the other way.
did she say she was coming back here?
Yeah, she wants to take a picture. I'm going to meet her in Fargo.
She's a photographer too. Kenny.
Well,
you're a photographer? And
yeah.
Well, they had this charming little circus in Deerwood last night. A family, you know, you don't see anything like that anymore. A family
didn't raise a thing. So I couldn't pay the interest on the money that we had to borrow to buy father out, and that was $5,000. And when the Harding administration, just as soon as the Harding administration came in, well, everything went down. Then they elected Hoover, you know, or Coolidge, and things commenced going down, you know. And Mellon, he was the Secretary of the Treasury. He was there for 12 years. Yeah. I couldn't make enough money to pay the taxes, and I had $210 in real estate tax and $42.10 in personal property. And we couldn't make enough money, by God, to pay the taxes, and then you had to keep the family going, you know. So then I says to Victor, let's hold an auction. I owed $1,175 at the bank. And we were doing, in 1919, we were doing well. We had 17 cows, but just as soon as Harding was elected, we commenced going down. So then I says to Victor, we'll have an auction, sell what we got, we'll keep the horses and a couple of cows, you keep that. And I says, for three of the children and my wife to Spokane, Washington. And when I had done that, I had to go back to the bank and borrow $100 so I could go to St. Louis, Ohio. it's tough, you know. Well, then I worked and traveled with the company. Then I was in St. Louis, Ohio. I filed all kinds of sawmills for 17 months. Never made better wages in all my life than I did on the job. And then it's made out of solid concrete. And all the conduits and everything had, and it was on movie form. It was the first job that ever went up on a movie form. We had conduits in for electricity and water and heat and everything else in the walls. So you couldn't see it, see? And I had the rafters like this on the shop. And then we had a joist across there. And I had some short boards, I put them over there, and I sent away and got that leaflet, you know, of our party, from the party. And I poked that then leaflets on to them boards there, so nobody knew that I had it, you know. And when anybody come in, we always drift around. My brother never would have been in Russia if it hadn't been for that. And I used to tell him about it, because I knew a lot about the office they had, the Amtrak in New York. I was well posted on, kept on, and whenever they let us, we wouldn't talk out of school, you know, I'd give them pamphlets. And we kept that up. Well, then I was hunting for somebody that really knew something about communism. I didn't find one. So I went, when I got settled, we went to a white barber shop to get shaved. That's a little time travel, you know, and then we want to look around, you know. My brother wasn't much for that, but I wanted to see what was going on around. So I went to a barber shop, and he cut me. You can turn that off.
Huh?
You can turn that off. And then he was a racist, see. he was kind of careless. And the darn thing started to fester. So I thought to myself, oh, shucks, I'm going to find another. It was right across the street from the state capitol. And there was about 12 barbers in it, all colored fellas. And the fella next to the door, he was blue-black. He was that dark, you know. And I asked him if I could have a shave, and he said, yes, boss, you can have a shave. And he said, you sit right down there. He was, his chair was empty, but he was one of the big fix that. And he did, and they gave me a very fine shave, so I kept on with them fellas. Every chair was full, and there was a chair in the end of the barber shop by itself. And a nice young fellow, colored man, was standing behind it. You know, he had no one in the chair. And so I said, well, I guess I better go up there. I says, he must be a barber. He had a barber chair there. Went up there and got acquainted with him. I asked him what his profession was, or what he was doing, or if he was going to college. Or he said, I'm going to college. He said, we got two of them here in Columbia. One is a Catholic and one is a Protestant college. But I don't know which one he went to. Anyway, it didn't make any difference. And I got to talking to him, and I happened to have next time I come in there, I mean, and then I always looked at this fellow, because I figured I could work better on him than I could work on the older fellows, you know. And I said, well, did you read that paper? And he said, you bet I did. And he said, it was a good one. Mm-hmm. And I says, I'll tell you what I'll do with you. If you give me your address, I says, I'll send for 25 copies and mail them to your address. I'll pay for them. Give you 25 copies. And he accepted, you know. He didn't know, they didn't know a thing about any of this stuff, you know. And he got them, and next time I came down there, it took a couple of weeks before he got them. But then the second time I came down there, I said, well, did you get your Negro champion yet? He said, you bet I did. Well, I says, how did it work out? He says, they went like hotcakes. See?
Yeah.
And you know, when I came back to Deerwood, I saw that the manager of the Negro Champion, no, not the Negro Champion, International Defense, was arrested. See,
mm-hmm.
That's the first inkling I had, and I know it was this year that just because I was there 12 months. 11 or 12 months. That's all I wanted, you know, but I never mentioned the Communist Party or the Socialist Party or anything else. I never mentioned, but I followed the line. Things I said, and knows about economics and sociology and politics. And I said, you don't need to be a communist. I said, to know anything about that. Heck with it, you know. And I got lots of stuff. And I clipped papers, capitalist papers, clipped articles. I bet you I got thousands of articles. Of course, some of mine good. You know, I was being educated right along. I was born a socialist.
How are you born? How can you be born a socialist?
Well, I'm going to tell you. I was the oldest one.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to use my head. See, I had to use my head. And when we was when we lived in the log cabin in those days, we had no fields. We just had a garden and timber galore all around you. There wasn't a thing touched, you know, all around you. And we had two cows, and we was just raising our first steers. That was in 1878. Just think of it.
Hmm.
Had two steers, two small bull calves, and two cows. We had two pigs, and we had about a dozen chickens. We was squatters in the beginning, that is, on another place. And we thought our neighbor Coffin, that was the only man in the world.